Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here in American Family Radio, Urban Family Talk. Abraham Hamilton III here, your host for the program. I have with me the capable gentleman known as J Squared, Mr. J Tross, Mr. Jeff Reed, and we are ready to get the proceedings going. I just want to remind you, we're still collecting listener testimonies. So if you want to get your name and your testimony in queue as we approach the Spring Share-a-thon, you are invited to call 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893, where you just leave a voice message. If this program has been a blessing to you, if the American Family Radio Network, the Urban Family Talk Radio Network have been a blessing to you, please leave your testimony. We would greatly appreciate it, and it will aid us, and I believe it will strengthen and encourage many other listeners to hear how you have been impacted by this ministry. I also want to remind you that you can listen to the show live on the radio dial. Just go to AFR.net or UrbanFamilyTalk.com to find out what is the station in your area, or you can listen live right there on either of those websites. You can also watch live if you have a Facebook page. You can watch on the Facebook Live offering through Facebook. If you just find the Hamilton Corners page there, you can listen live there. And I would encourage you, if you don't want to do that, to subscribe to the Hamilton Corners YouTube page, the YouTube channel, I should say, where you can watch the program live there too, because sometimes you may catch me dancing. Who knows? If you want to watch and listen.
And those with Roku can also find your program on the Calger Network. It's C-A-W-G-E-R.
All right, expanding. So you can catch us on the Calger Network on a Roku channel. So some funny things happening. More people want to find out what's going on in the corner. Well, welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Well, we're going to jump right into this today. Romans chapter 15, verse 4 says, the things that are written aforetime are written for our learning, that through patience and the comfort of Scripture we might have hope. When the Apostle Paul penned those words, he was referring clearly to the Hebrew Scriptures, the Old Testament, or which I refer to as the First Testament, because the New Testament, he was living it and writing it at that time. And so we're going to delve into the Old Testament, the First Testament today, 2 Chronicles chapter 16. It's a very short chapter, but it is packed with lessons for us. There are just 14 verses in that chapter, and I'm going to jump right into it. We're going to talk about the king, former king of Judah, Asa, A-S-A, talk a little bit about his life. So we'll start right here, verse 1 in chapter 16. I'll read through it, then I'll make some comments after the fact. Verse 1, in the 36th year of the reign of Asa, so he wasn't a newbie when this happened, Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and built Ramah, that he might permit no one to go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. Then Asa took silver and gold from the treasures of the house of the Lord and the king's house and sent them to Ben-Hadad of Syria, who lived in Damascus, saying, there's a covenant between me and you, as there was between my father and your father. Behold, I'm sending to you silver and gold. Go break your covenant with Baasha, king of Israel, that he may withdraw from me. And Ben-Hadad listened to King Asa and sent the commanders of his armies against the cities of Israel. And they conquered Ijon, Dan, Abel-Maim, and all the store cities of Naphtali. And when Baasha heard of it, he stopped building Ramah and let his work cease. Then King Asa took all Judah, and they carried away the stones of Ramah and its timber, with which Baasha had been building, and with them he built Geba and Mizpah. At that time, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you relied on the king of Syria and did not rely on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Syria has escaped you. Were not the Ethiopians and the Libyans a huge army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he gave them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to give strong support to those whose heart is blameless. The King James says perfect toward him. You have done foolishly in this, for from now on you will have wars. Then Asa was angry with the seer and put him in the stocks in prison, for he was in a rage with him because of this. And Asa inflicted cruelties upon some of the people at that time, at the same time. The acts of Asa from first to last are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa was diseased in his feet, and his disease became severe. Yet even in his disease, he didn't seek the Lord, but sought help from physicians. And Asa slept with his fathers, dying in the 41st year of his reign. They buried him in the tomb that he had cut for himself in the city of David. They laid him on a bier that had been filled with various kinds of spices prepared by the perfumer's art, and they made a very great fire in his honor. Now, this is it's a very sad story. I shared before how I learned from one of the elders at my church in New Orleans about the parting message revealing truth. And the encouragement that I want to offer today is not to allow ourselves to wane in fervor and wane in zeal and wane in fidelity to the Lord as time passes. If you're familiar with King Asa, and you can study him in Kings and in Second Chronicles, that he started off doing rather well, started off crying out to the Lord, started off depending upon the Lord. But as time progressed, Asa yielded to a temptation that's all too common for human beings, that we begin to rely on that that seemingly strong arm of the flesh to the exclusion of the Lord. Now, let me go through this quite a bit to see explain what's going on here. So Asa, the southern kingdom of Judah, at this point, the kingdoms have been divided. The southern kingdom of Judah has its own king. The northern kingdom of Israel has its own king. Asa is king of Judah. Baasha is king of Israel. At the beginning of chapter 16, the Bible tells us that King Baasha of Israel starts to build Ramah, which is one of the southernmost cities in the northern kingdom of Israel. And the express purpose for him building Ramah is very similar to the reason why Jeroboam put golden calves in both Dan and Beersheba to prevent people in the northern kingdom from crossing the border going into the southern kingdom. Baasha did not want, at a time where his nation was in great hostility and tension with Judah, with the southern kingdom of Judah, he didn't want people passing from his kingdom into the southern kingdom of Judah. And so as this was happening, the Bible records King Asa takes silver and gold, and it mentions first, he takes it from the treasuries of the Lord's temple. And then secondarily, he takes it from the king's treasury and goes and makes an alliance with the pagan king of Syria, Ben-Hadad. Goes so far as to say there's a covenant between you and I. Now, the thing that's interesting is that Ben-Hadad had already had a covenant with King Baasha, and Asa knew about it. Asa sought to entice Ben-Hadad away from his alliance with Baasha so that he can create a new alliance with him and the southern kingdom of Judah. And so what happens is that Ben-Hadad says, fine, I'll go to the highest bidder. You're going to offer me more money than Baasha? No big deal. I'll flip my allegiance to you. Now, the Bible records this, and this is always how it happens. The book of Amos tells us this, that the Lord doesn't do anything in the earth without revealing it first to his sons, the prophets. Something I want to tell you, that at all times, at all points in history, and at all points in the future, God will retain for himself a witness at all times. Take that to the bank. The scripture supports that, and you see it demonstrated all throughout. God maintains a witness for himself. There was the intertestamental period where there were no more prophets leading up to John the Baptist, but that does not mean there was not a faithful witness of the king, okay? Hanani, and the Bible names him, Hanani is a prophet of God. At the very moment of Asa's turning his allegiance and dependency away from the Lord to depend on the apparent strong arm of the flesh in Ben-Hadad, the Lord sends Hanani to go confront Asa. Same way the Bible tells us in the book of Corinthians, there's no temptation that overcomes you. Temptation is all common to all man. But when the temptation comes, the Lord provides a way of escape. The Lord always provides a way of escape. But it's incumbent upon you and I to take the way of escape. Hanani confronts Asa and says, listen, have you forgotten? If you turn a few pages over in 2 Chronicles chapter 14, there was an army that attacked Judah, that was lodged to fight Judah, that had over a million soldiers in it from Ethiopia and Libya. And Asa, at the time when he's small in his own eyes, he cries out to the Lord in chapter 14. And the Lord delivers him from an army that far outnumbered his own army. Why does the Lord deliver him? Because Asa is trusting in the Lord. Asa is living out, Lord, it is in you I live and move and have my very being. There is no deliverance for us unless it comes from you. And much to the chagrin of the real million man march that are opposing King Asa, the Lord delivers them with a much smaller army. But in this particular instance, and the Bible gives no superfluous details, because that was earlier in King Asa's reign. But now that he's been on the throne 36 years, you see, he's more politically astute. he's more familiar with the ways of diplomatic maneuvering, you see. So now that he has a current threat of King Baasha from Israel, now he's going to rely on his diplomatic relationships and his natural political maneuverings now that he's old. Man, you hear the saying, there's no fool like an old fool. Why is it that Asa, in his older years, in his latter years, he turns to the flesh? Brothers and sisters, I want to tell you this, and this is going to cut against some of the conventional understandings. Time spent on the planet does not by itself create or produce wisdom. Many of us, and I was taught that elderly were synonymous with wisdom. The Bible tells us a hoary head, meaning a gray head, is a crown of life if it be found in the way of righteousness. To say it in another way, just hanging around a long time doesn't mean that you will adopt and develop the wisdom of God, because the way that wisdom is developed and produced is that we apply the principles of the Lord. We apply the word of God to our lives. And a hoary head that has lived a life submitted to the Lordship of Jesus Christ, submitted to the governorship of the Spirit of God, relying upon the strong arm of the Spirit of God, that is a seat of wisdom. But here we have Asa, a king who is on the throne 36 years, and he waits till his 36th year to begin to act foolishly. And he's relying on the flesh. The Lord sends the prophet Hananiah to him and says, listen, man, because you have failed to rely on the Lord, because you have failed to depend on the Lord, the enemy that truly is your enemy in Syria has escaped you. And not only that, you will now have wars continually, which is a principle for us. Whatever we pursue in the flesh will have to be sustained in the flesh. Or to say this another way, the Lord has no obligation to sustain anything that does not originate with him, which should encourage you and I to avoid trying to make moves on our own without depending upon the counsel of the Lord. Because if we move out exclusively on our own agenda, guess who's going to have to keep that agenda up? You and I. So the Lord tells him through Hananiah, because you refuse to rely on me, now you're going to have to lie in this bed that you have made. And look how Asa responds. Asa responds by not humbling himself and repenting of his error. Asa's response is to get mad at Hananiah. Or to say it the way we say it, he wants to shoot the messenger. Why is that? Asa knows he can't act on his anger against the Lord. So he does the next best thing. He takes his anger out on the messenger of the Lord and puts him into prison. Which should be, once again, instructive for you and I. Because God commissions you with his word to convey his word, you shouldn't expect celebration as a result of obeying the Lord. When you have people who are committed to disobeying the Lord, it is highly likely that when you reveal what God has spoken in his word, you may put yourself in a position of becoming or drawing the ire of the recipient of that word. King Asa put Hananiah in jail. And instead of humbling himself and turning, the Bible says King Asa became diseased in his feet in his 39th year. And instead of, even in light of the disease in his feet, crying out to the Lord, he, with great obstinance, refused to depend on God. And then the chapter ends with Asa expiring. So the short communication that I have to encourage you with today is, don't allow years in service to the Lord to lull you into the place where you feel like, I'll take it from here, God. Let me use my human ingenuity to execute from here on out.
liberal Baptists have been revealed. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. A small group of Baptists just lifted a ban on their churches hiring homosexuals and transgendered individuals. These liberal churches, however, still prohibit identified individuals from serving in leadership roles for missionary work. The affiliation of churches is called the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. While it's hard to know definitely, it likely represents between 1 to 2% of Baptist congregations. The group's willingness to bend the Bible to some of its congregants' beliefs could have some deep and unintended consequences. This so-called compromise could actually eliminate the freedom of religion exception under which the previous ban would have been constitutionally protected. It might make their churches vulnerable to costly lawsuits while discarding a legal foundation for success. It exposes that they do not see the Bible as God's word, which is a core of Baptist belief. Learn more at lc.org.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hi, this is Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I meet a lot of parents who are tired and discouraged. They love their children dearly, but the teen years have taken a toll on the family. Is that you? Well, maybe it's time for a little encouragement. For helpful resources for your family, check out our website at parentingtodaysteens.org and be sure to listen to Parenting Today's Teens for help and hope.
Saturday afternoon at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio.
Some 2,000 years ago, the followers of the crucified Christ learned that he had risen from the grave. They quickly spread the word that Jesus was alive.
Jesus!
It's good news that spread from one generation to the next, and now it's our turn. One way to tell this extraordinary news to others is by simply wearing and sharing our colorful He Lives Easter buttons. Get your pack of 10 today at afastore.net.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here in American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm going to dig into a little bit. This has been a jam-packed week with so many stories and lots of things I've gone over and prepared for the program, but we just hadn't been able to get to it. One of the things I want to dig into now is this yesterday's high school walkout. And I want to ask a question, especially for those of you who were proud. I saw kind of posts on social media who are celebrating their children's. Why so-and-so has a voice. And they participated in this and they did that. I have a question for you. Do you really know the origins and more specifically the people who organized this particular walkout? I made the comments when I first learned about it. It's pretty amazing that all of a sudden, all of these adolescents just have these wonderfully printed signs, and they have this amazingly organized event that if I had to ask most of you, if you could get 10 of your teenagers to organize, you know, just to go to the soccer game on time, you might say, I don't know, we probably will be late. But all of a sudden, this thing just whammo came together. Who really is behind? If you're wondering the answer to that question, I've done a little bit of research, and it turns out that the people who organized this teenager's protest were the same women who organized the Women's March. None other than Linda Sarsour, of course, Jihad Against Trump fame, you know, the very same Linda Sarsour who argued at the annual ISNA conference, the Islamic Society of North America, that Muslims in America should not attempt to assimilate. they should participate in resisting President Trump and somewhat of a societal and civilizational jihad against Trump. This is out of our own mouth. Linda Sarsour, the other ladies, I have the names. Yes, here we are. I have it right here. Linda Sarsour, Carmen Perez, and Tamika Mallory. Now, the interesting part of that, that each of these three women have a precarious relationship with none other than Louis Farrakhan. And if you are unfamiliar with Louis Farrakhan, where have you been? But I know that some people may not be aware of Louis Farrakhan's ideology. And so I have just a very short clip that gives you a window into Louis Farrakhan from 2006 all the way to February 25th, 2018. And Mr. Farrakhan says this, if you would play clip number three.
Your country has been taken from you by the synagogue of Satan, the satanic Jews that control everything and mostly everybody.
White folks are going down. And Farrakhan, by God's grace, has pulled the cover off of that satanic Jew.
Now, this is the Louis Farrakhan who Linda Sarsour describes as, oh, what a blessed man. When asked to disavow their relationship with these men, Carmen Perez and Tamika Mallory go further on to describe that if your leader does not have, this is a quote from Tamika Mallory, if your leader does not have the same enemies as Jesus, they may not be the leader, end quote. So she's, of course, asserting that Jesus' enemies were the Jews, which is kind of ironic because Jesus himself was what? Paul was what? Peter was what? I mean, come on. And another thing I find rather interesting is that the very people who like to decry racism, is this not racist? Which, of course, y'all know, there's no such thing as multiple races of human beings. I'm using their language for the sake of making this point. But clearly, this is an ethnocentric prejudice being displayed by one of their champions. Did you know that these were the people organizing this march of teenagers, this walkout? And the thing that's so galling to me is that when you really start to see this, you recognize something. Linda Sarsour, Tamika Mallory, Carmen Perez, the women's march people, do you really think they're concerned with safety of school children? Think about the women's march. Or is there another agenda afoot? So the way things go, and I always refer to this Thomas Sowell quote, it's not that Johnny can't learn. It's because Johnny has confused. I mean, not that Johnny can't think. It's because Johnny has confused thinking with feeling. And with a play right out of the Rules of Radicals playbook, where you take advantage of a tragedy, and it's an amazing. It's an amazing thing that all of the ire and scorn and emotion and attention and vehement vilification has been placed on groups like the NRA, has been targeted to what is called assault weapons, which I may be off on this. We'll have John Lott on the program tomorrow, who's a Second Amendment expert. But there hasn't been an assault weapon used in a mass shooting in the country ever. So why all of this ruckus about assault weapons bans? Hey, so they really are attempting to represent semi-automatic weapons, as if they are fully automatic weapons. But then you forget things like the Virginia Tech shooting occurred by a perpetrator who killed using handguns. So what you really begin to realize when you start unpacking this layer by layer is that this is really a nefarious agenda. But to continue to pull on the heartstrings, to get people to emote and emote to such a degree to where their capacity for reasoning is completely obliterated, you have things like this that happen. If you would play clip number one.
25 years ago, my parents immigrated to Montgomery County because they believed in the promise of this country.
Yes.
They told me about their hardships that they faced in their native country.
Yes.
And their education system, one supposedly not as developed as ours, they didn't have enough papers and pencils for the students.
Yes.
Yet through all the lack of resources, through all their struggles, they never had to worry about someone barging into their classroom with an assault rifle and slaughtering everyone in their class.
Yes.
That is an American tragedy. They never had to think about getting shot at any moment. That's an American thought. And they never had to worry that their child would be the victim of mass shooting. That's an American worry. And the United States, we have archaic gun control laws for a 21st century reality. We've known the solution since Columbine. But despite there being more than 200 school shootings since then, Congress has done nothing. We have to keep weapons of war from everybody and expand upon our mental health resources.
Now, you see this, and it's rather shameful when you really start to unpack this, because now you have these people willing to stoop to no lows to where, in my opinion, every single adult in the country should be opposed to this. And when I'm talking about this, I mean using children to advocate for the very, very regressive adult desire for gun control and gun confiscation. Because these are the same children who we on one breath say, well, they really haven't even gotten to the age where they formed the portion of the brain that allows them to reason at the greatest capacity. We'll say that you couldn't expect children to do this. And one of my greatest pet peeves is when we refer to athletes as one voice, you want to call them kids or children when they're 20-something years old. But then on the other end, now we want them to lead a political revolution. Which one do you want? And as much as I will disagree vehemently with many of the children's speeches and their opinions and things of that nature, I really blame these adults that are using these children, using them for rather nefarious purposes. That young man made the statement that his parents never had to worry about a child coming to their classroom to shoot them. Well, I would say, if you go back, about 40 years ago, no other Americans had to worry about anybody coming to the class and shooting them. And the ratio of guns to American citizens was about the same then as it is now. I made the point in the statement many times over that we've had guns in America since there was an America. But we haven't seen what we're seeing now. Why is that? And I have just a little bit of information for you, not too much. I don't want to be too heavy on this Thursday, you know. But did you know that according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, every single day, not sometimes, every single day in America, taking these statistics on average, nearly 30 Americans die in motor vehicle crashes that involve drunk driving. Every day. Did we see a school walk out to have car control laws? Should we start having federal background checks before people can have driver's licenses? Because if you do the math, 30 a day, that's a pretty high number. According to the FBI's 2015 Uniform Crime Report, it shows that nearly three times more people were stabbed or hacked to death than were killed with shotguns and rifles combined. The number of shotgun and rifle deaths totaled 548 in 2015. And the people who were stabbed or hacked to death totaled 1,573. So should we have a knife and sword? Look, I have to go tell my wife, babe, butcher block no longer accessible in our kitchen. And look at the absolute lunacy in this. The advocacy and the arguments for gun control legislation is to go to the and use the analogy of the drunk drivers who kill 30 people a day in the country. The response would be to go to the non-intoxicated drivers and require them to forfeit their driver's license and ability to drive the car. You see how insane that is? Yet that the reasoning that is employed in the gun debate is not employed in these other areas. So it has to force you to ask the question, is this really just rank ignorance or is there an agenda? I think when you call into consideration the fact that the people that are involved in this are the Women's March organizers who are allied with Louis Farrakhan, who, by the way, the regressives still have not been required to disavow. Still gonna get that one. I mean, if we hate racism and ethnocentric prejudices, how does Farrakhan get a pass in the mainstream? Is it inquiring minds want to know, you know? I mean, hey, I guess hatred is not the issue. You have to hate the right group. See the smile? In order to really get in trouble, it's selective hatred. Kind of reminds me of Proverbs. The book and a scripture in Proverbs says, wicked men don't understand justice. But I just had to just want to share that with you. I'll probably go into that in a bit more detail with Mr. Lott tomorrow. Not to be outdone, I have to do something else that I don't have to, but I'm going to. That's probably going to make some people want to, you know, put something in their ears. I'll just warn you now. I'm going to play some audio from Hillary Clinton. So as if we had not heard enough from Mrs. Clinton, she has carried her show on the road. Speaking at the India Today Conclave in Mumbai, Mrs. Clinton was asked to explain how inexplicably she lost, and you guys know I hate identity politics, but how 52% of less melanated women voted for Donald Trump. And y'all know why I say less melanated, because all people have melanin, just different quantities. But 52% of less melanated women voted for Donald Trump and not for her. And she was asked to explain it in Mumbai, India. And this is what she had to say. If you would play clip number 5, please.
Democrats, going back to my husband, even before, but just in recent times, going back to Bill and our candidates and then President Obama, have been losing the white vote, including white women. We do not do well with white men, and we don't do well with married white women. And part of that is an identification with the Republican Party and a sort of ongoing pressure to vote the way that your husband, your boss, your son, whoever, believes you should.
So wait a minute. So let me get this straight. This is amazing to me, guys. This is amazing to me. So this is the woman who built herself as the pinnacle of feminism, who now is attempting to explain her loss by saying that basically the women who voted for President Trump, they must be idiots. That the only reason why they did that is because they have the inability to think for themselves. They are perpetually beholden to doing whatever the men of their lives tell them. Now, this is a person who wanted to represent herself as the example of women's achievement. Ay, Dios mío santísimo. Can we dispatch with the notion that Hillary Clinton is a champion for women? Finally, can we dispatch with that? Because I don't know. I just have this weird idea that women have the ability to think for themselves. I mean, maybe that's a radical thought. Perhaps women, especially those who are married, have the ability to say, well, you know, I may not want her. And this is the thing that was hilarious to me. And I think Kellyanne Conway made this observation. Isn't it amazing that this statement is coming from a woman who the only reason why she's known on the national stage is because of who she's married to? This is amazing to me. So according to Hillary Clinton, right? All right, guys, let's get this right. According to Hillary Clinton, married women... Married women don't know anything about abortion. They don't know anything about immigration. They don't know anything about religious liberty. They don't know anything about fiscal policies and taxation. They don't know anything about national defense. They don't know anything about foreign policy. They don't know anything about anything. All that they know is if it's a man, they must obey, even if it's their son. Yet she's the champion of women. Ay, Dios mío santísimo. Well, not to be outdone, because her sentiment is very similar to the former First Lady Michelle Obama, who said, quote, any woman who voted against Hillary Clinton voted against their own voice. Huh. So these feminist icons are saying that these women don't even know how to protect their own voices. Listen, Democrat Party, I'm going to give you some free advice. Come real close. Tell you a not-so-secret secret. If you really want to try to have some gains, stop letting Hillary Clinton speak. She's not helping.
Well, September weather in Washington, D.C. is generally very, very nice. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Our June tour sold out. We've only got seats left for our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and George Washington's Mount Vernon. Now, for all the information on this trip, just go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com. We're also going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. So if you want to do that tour as well, all the information, again, is available at spiritualheritagetours.com. Those trips, Williamsburg and Washington, are back-to-back. We're going to have a wonderful time with listeners from all over the country to American Family Radio on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in September. Again, for all the information, go to our website, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Freedom from Islam. This is David Wheaton, host of The Christian Worldview. Islam exerts a tight grip on both Muslims and non-Muslims, particularly in Muslim-controlled areas. Muslims fear ostracism and even the death penalty for leaving the religion, while non-Muslims are given three choices: convert, die, or the Dhimma Pact, which is subjugation and taxation to keep your head. This fear-based system is enslaving, and breaking free is daunting. But this is where Christ's work on the cross comes in. While we are not guaranteed political freedom in this life, we are promised spiritual freedom when we put our faith in Christ. Jesus said, "If the Son makes you free, you will be free indeed." Hear an interview about freedom from Islam at thechristianworldview.org. This weekend, we'll discuss the life of Billy Graham.
Listen to The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton, Saturday mornings at 8 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. The McKinney School District in Texas will no longer hold graduation ceremonies at a Baptist megachurch. The school district had asked Prestonwood Baptist Church to cover up or remove a cross inside the sanctuary, but Pastor Jack Graham refused, calling the district's decision to move graduation a cowardly decision. Graduation ceremonies have been held inside the massive auditorium for 13 years without nary a complaint. But a small group of atheists and Muslims, along with the Freedom From Religion Foundation, objected, citing constitutional issues of having a secular event inside a church building. The school district said families from other faith groups felt uncomfortable inside a Christian church. So now graduations will be held in a public arena where parents will be charged $25 per seat. I suppose that's the price they have to pay to keep the atheist happy these days. I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner, where we are recovering successfully from that ill-timed, ill-fated confrontation we had with our audible consumption of that despicable voice that is Hillary Rodham Clinton. Have more audio from her, but I might not play it. I'll just read some of the transcript of what I have for her, because quite frankly, some have suggested that Waterboard could be, in some circumstances, replaced with repeated looped audio from Hillary Clinton in order to extract vital information on the international sphere. I don't know who said that, but I'm just telling you that was a recommendation that was passed on to me, so look. Hey, I'm just passing it on, all right? If you want to be a part of the program, you would like to weigh in on the conversations we've had so far, whether it's beginning in 2 Chronicles 15 with Asa in his older years choosing to rely on the flesh rather than continually dependent upon the Lord, we can do that. Or if you want to talk about young people being used as pawns, political pawns, in a broader, and I would dare say, age-old attempt to confiscate American guns, or to severely restrict the accessibility and the application of the Second Amendment, you can do that. Or if you would like to talk about the inexplicable contempt that Hillary Clinton seems to have for women, it's amazing. You can do so by calling 888-589-8840. That is the number to call. The number again is 888-589-8840. And not to be outdone, Hillary Clinton added to her assertion that any woman who didn't vote for her, they have to be under the civic thumb of their husbands or sons or brothers. Don't leave the brothers out. Because if they are married and they have a husband, I guess married and having a husband, we know that's normal, but you know, it may not be so normal for Mrs. Clinton. Then if they didn't vote for her, it has to be because they were doing the will of the alpha males in their lives. Which is a stinging slap in the face if you were a woman. In addition to that, she said this, quote, "I won the places that represent 2/3 of America's gross domestic product. So I won the places that are optimistic, diverse, dynamic, and moving forward." Oh, I see. So in addition to being a female imbecile, incapable of voting on their own, if you voted for President Trump, you are not optimistic, according to Mrs. Clinton. You are not diverse, according to Mrs. Clinton. You are not dynamic, nor are you moving forward. So you're racist, you're dumb, and you are misogynistic, and you're poor. Or if you really want to say it, you're poor, if you didn't vote for her. Didn't she apologize for that deplorable comment? I guess she really didn't mean that apology. I'm like, Mrs. Clinton, tell us how you really feel. I mean, this is amazing to me. And you know what's, in all candor, you know, I'm cracking some jokes. In all candor, the reality of what you're seeing here is Hillary Clinton and those who are on her train, they cannot believe that all of their shenanigans, like voter fraud, you know, we saw the Project Veritas videos of how in Chicago you have people voting over and over again, you know, bussing people in who are not citizens of the country, but they want to participate in the elections, where you have former President Obama saying on the Me Too interview that if you're illegal, you vote. All of those things, they didn't work. She couldn't believe in what we're learning now, that the Fusion GPS strategy to get Fusion GPS to dig up dirt on your political opponents and use the Perkins Coie law firm to funnel the money, the dry run that was used by President Obama to dig up dirt on Mitt Romney, though it worked for him, when it comes back around to her, it doesn't work for her. All of the scheming and the scandals and the salacious activity that they participate in to win elections, it did not work. Having almost unanimous coverage in the mainstream talking snake media that really is serving as the press release arm of your campaign did not work. Having $1 billion where your campaign basically runs the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, that cheats Bernie Sanders in the primary, and even though all of the cheating you do, it still didn't work. It's the ultimate frustration. I mean, and this is where it really all comes down to, guys. For those who are advocates of the regressive agenda, for those who believe in regressivism, government is God. So we really are witnessing kind of a Psalms 2 moment. Why does the heathen rage? There's such raging, there's such malevolence and contempt oozing so easily out of Hillary Clinton's mouth, and many of those who are part of the whole resistance movement. Not everybody, but many of them who are part of the resistance movement, because they are losing the grip on their most closely, deeply held religion, which is government. You see, if they can't control government, they feel insecure. But for those who are believers in the resurrected Christ, like you and I, government is not our God. That's why you didn't see the types of conniption fits, even though there were lots of people who were very disappointed in President Obama's election. You didn't see what you're seeing now. Even this, the whole Russia collusion scandal that is literally crumbling on the public platform. All of these maneuverings, all of these shenanigans, they didn't work. So there's no other option, kind of like Asa did with Hannah and I. Hannah and I tried to tell Asa the truth. Asa put him in jail. Hillary Clinton, the reality is, and you hear this elitism that comes from her. I won the places that represents 2/3 of America's gross domestic product, which means that only people voted for President Trump must be those dumb, poor idiots. That's probably not the best thing to do if you're trying to be a politician and trying to help a political party. I'm just saying. But she cannot help but allow that type of contempt for Americans who don't agree with her to come out because it's touching at her God and their God. You want to talk about an offense, and I'm so grateful that Joy Behar had to come on television and apologize. I'm sorry. I offended all the Christians in America. Vice President Pence is absolutely right. Well, why wasn't he right when you... And look, we all know the only reason why you're doing that is because the Disney execs made you do it. Whoopi Goldberg let that cat out of the bag. Now, I'm glad she did it, but let's be clear here. The initiative for this was not Joy Behar herself. And I also would like to know why Sonny Hostin isn't apologizing. But that's a whole another deal. But Hillary Clinton's apology for the deplorables comment, that's what she really felt. That's what she really thinks. That if you don't agree with her, you are deplorable. Or you're poor, not dynamic, not diverse, not optimistic. Or if you're a woman and you're married, you can't think for yourself. To the phone lines we go. We'll start off in Georgia, where William is on the line. William, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
How you doing this afternoon, brother?
I am doing great. Good. Thank you for calling.
Good. I got a statement and I got a question.
Sure.
Here's a statement.
Okay.
As far as Hillary Clinton's advocation for married women, it only goes as far as her political benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is this, and this might be a funny question to ask, but as far as her ridiculing the women who are married that can't think for themselves, Are the ones who are actually pro-abortion included in this as well?
Ooh, William, now you're hitting below the belt. Actually, you're hitting above the belt. Great question. That's a great question. I would, maybe I'm going out on a limb here, but I think she would say, well, if you're pro-abortion, maybe you can think for yourself. And of course, the point that you're making is that her contempt is ideology specific. And I think you're spot on. And this from the same woman who, in full awareness of Planned Parenthood's history with Margaret Sanger and her penchant for eugenics and her desire to eliminate people whose skin colors look like mine from existence, she says she celebrates Margaret Sanger. Isn't that amazing? That's a great, great point, William. Thank you for your call. Back to the phone lines. So we go next to Arkansas, where Lynn is on the line. Lynn, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Yeah, I just I got this list from Hal Lindsey's program, and it's a list of the sponsors of the mm-hmm. Women's March.
Oh, yes.
Is it okay if I read some of them?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, National Abortion Rights Action League.
Boom.
American Atheists.
Boom.
Communist Party USA.
Boom.
American Humanist Organization.
Boom, boom.
Code Pink.
Boom.
Planned Parenthood.
Uh-huh.
MoveOn.org.
Uh-huh.
ACLU,
uh-huh.
Amnesty International,
uh-huh.
which is anti-Israel,
uh-huh.
CARE, you know, the Council on American Islamic Relations.
Oh, yes, it's not C-A-R-E, it's C-A-I-R. Come on.
Yes, uh-huh. And Democratic Socialists of America,
mm-hmm.
and the Gay and Lesbian Alliance. There's more.
And that's more, and I'll ask this question rhetorically, and I say this for all of America. Do you want your kids involved in an organized protest put on by these people? That's why we have to get to the place where we don't hop on bandwagons because of emotion, but that we look, as Proverbs says, look well into the matter. Because I wouldn't want my children, who are not old enough to be in high school yet, and thank God for the revelation of my life, I will not let the government get their grubby hands on my children. I wouldn't want my children involved in this. This is crazy. This is crazy. So Lynn, thank you for sharing your list. I had the same list, but I just, you know, it's a 1-hour program. Somebody need to call somebody to do something about that time limit. You know what I'm talking about? All right, back to the phone lines we go. We'll go next to Iowa, where Lisa is on the line. Lisa, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yes, Lisa, are you there?
Oh, hey, yeah, I'm from Louisiana.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh, well, our apologies, fellow.
Yeah, that's okay. My name is Leisha.
Leisha, okay.
I'm deeply offended by Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I am a professional woman. I'm a paralegal. I work in a law firm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm married. I'm a mother, and I'm a grandmother, and I make decisions every day.
So wait, Lisa, let me ask you this question, because you sound like you may be capable of making a decision on your own. Am I right about that?
I believe so, Abe. I talk to doctors.
Okay.
I talk to lawyers.
Huh.
I talk to judges. I can follow a thought process. I can get to the end and find a solution. So, thanks for recognizing that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, somebody may want to let Hillary Clinton know that, don't you think?
I feel very sorry for women who pay money to go hear the things that spew out of her mouth.
Mm. Lisa, thank you very much for your call and your comments. And it's infuriating as much as it is sad. Because this is where we are. It's like Van Jones crying out on election night, it's a white lash. I'm like, are you really that? Really? So that's what it is for you. So the same people, the states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, you know, all these states who voted for President Obama just 4 years ago, all of a sudden, they've become something that they weren't 4 years ago? Come on, man. Where's Chris Carter when I need him? Come on, man. Back to the phone lines. To Tennessee we go, where Shirley is on the line. Shirley, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I've got a program in 3 minutes, so I'm going to make this short.
Okay.
It's interesting to me that Hillary Clinton goes around saying these things. She sounds really crazy, like she's talking outside of her neck, because we know that the liberals, including Hillary, they'll always say when they're trying to get elected, they need the African-American vote. And I'm an African-American speaking this. So I'm always listening to this. But at the same time, Hillary said that it was white married women, one of which she is, so I guess she's listening to Bill then and not thinking her own thoughts. But they say that white married women put Trump in office, but I know that I helped, thankfully. And they always say that whites do that. But yet, when it's time for votes, they always say they need the African-American vote. Here's the problem, though. They won't defund Planned Parenthood. So they'll never have enough African-Americans to vote for them because they're too busy killing them all. Mm. Thanks so much. Bye.
Shirley, spot on. Thank you for your call and your comments. Try to get one more in. We'll go to Ohio now, where J.D. is on the line. J.D., thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Go right ahead.
I want to tell you that Hillary better think twice when she accuses people of telling people how to vote. Mm. My son worked for a union company. Every year at voting time, he got a letter from the union saying that he had to, not they didn't want him to, he had to vote Democrat.
Mm.
So the Democratic Party is telling people who to vote.
Mm. So your point, J.D., is that not really that they have a problem with others telling others how to vote? They have a problem when that instruction doesn't go their way. Astute observation, because I keenly remember former First Lady Michelle Obama saying, for people who have darker skin, it doesn't matter who is on the ballot, doesn't matter what they've done, doesn't matter what they stand for, doesn't matter what their platform is, if they have a D next to their name, they are the best choice for you. Sounds a lot like what you're saying there, JD. I appreciate your call and your comment. And here's the bottom line. We have to get to the place, if we really want to have the types of dialogue we want to have, we have to get to the place where we don't make quality assessments about certain people because they disagree with us solely. But it seems that the regressives are not interested in that. If things don't go their way, out come the name calling.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.